Hello everyone and welcome to the Knee Down Podcast. My name is Matt Grant and I've got a very special guest with us here today. We have Declan Van Rosmalen. I hope I pronounced that right, mate. IOM Motorsports rider from Junior GP stock class. Declan from Australia to Spain and now to the Knee Down Podcast. Welcome, mate.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Thank you for having on me. It's an amazing feeling.
It's an absolute pleasure. We have a mutual connection, Craig Dickinson. Want to give him a big shout out because he was also on the podcast for Knee Down a couple of weeks ago.
No way. Okay. All right.
So we'll give him a special shout out and for the making this connection happen. So big shout out and thank you, Craig, if you're happening to be watching this. But he's not the star of the show today and neither am I. You are, Declan. So I've got some questions for you if you're ready, mate.
Sweet as, ready as.
Let's do it, mate. Let's do it. So then, little bit of an introduction then from yourself. Number 22, IUM Motorsports Junior Stock Rider. Thank you for joining us. But I've got to ask, I think we start from the beginning. Was there a specific race, rider, or moment that got you in the sport today that makes you continue to follow that dream diligently every day?
You know, definitely the battles between Mark and Rossi. Like, those were the prime races and battles, and I always grew up watching MotoGP because my dad would ride. So I always watched MotoGP with him. And, you know, I thought that would be a fun thing to do, and yeah, I've always loved watching them two race. The best riders, best racers in the world.
So you're 19 years old, so I'm guessing you didn't see much of Stoner going up, or did you get to see him?
Actually, I saw the race at Laguna. I watched that, but I didn't really watch much because I haven't been racing for a while. So I watched it, but I didn't really know anything about all the racing and all the riders until not even like a year and a half ago, 2 years now.
Oh, okay. So you picked out those couple of rides that you like, your Marquez, your Rossi's, and you think, ooh, I'm hooked on this, right?
Yeah.
And do you have a preference out of the two?
Everyone's probably not going to like me, but it's Marquez, of course.
I think that's fair. I think that's the modern way now, is that we are finding the youngsters like Marquez and the old ones like myself. We're still with Valentino.
Yeah, you know. You know, Valentino built it, but I always, you know, Mark was just a very aggressive rider, very aggressive, and I don't know, I liked it.
that's all it can be sometimes, isn't it? One moment, one rider, one thing that just goes, I love this sport.
Exactly.
So, when you first moved to Europe, coming from Australia, what was the biggest cultural or just general difference between riding Australia to Europe now?
So, you know, honestly, like, because I've only raced in Australia twice, because I live in America now, so I'm in America, but I just came back from Australia. Biggest difference is, honestly, is the tracks, like, what you're doing on the bike, different things, people, food, language barrier, there's all types of different things, you know? The first year I was here in Spain, last year, of course, it was really tough, but I was able to have a teammate with me, and we were able to do fun things, and we were practically living with each other. But, yeah, I gotta say the biggest difference, man, is like, the people over here and stuff. It's all different, you know.
And was it different in when you were in Moto America as well?
Very different in Moto America.
Right, okay.
Kind of the racers are kind of like America and Spain, like they're kind of like the same, like they don't, some talk to you, some don't, you know, like some are doing their own thing, you know, but others just don't really like you, depending on where you're coming from and stuff like that.
So rivals stay rivals on the track and off the track.
Exactly.
Got you. And I get a wonderful buzz from talking to you. I think you're a lovely young man. So I'm guessing you're that person who wants to talk to everyone. You enjoy their company, right?
Yeah. I like having a chat with everyone, you know. I haven't been in the racing industry in a long time, and I'm a very friendly guy, and I'm a nice person. So I just like having a conversation with people, you know. It's always I try and talk to some people in the paddock. I have some friends in the Spanish paddock, which is nice. So, you know, I just try and talk to whoever I can, and whoever I'm battling with would be nice, you know?
Learn a bit of secrets and not give too many secrets away.
That's exactly right.
So if you had to describe your journey from a brief stint in Australia to Moto America and to now, has there been a sense of change from yourself? So when you were in Moto America, was there a certain pressure? And then was there a certain pressure now that you're here today?
Yes. So, you know, in Moto America was my first pro racing year. So there was definitely, like, it was definitely stressful because I was always trying to qualify and I was always worried where I'd be in the pack in the race. And this whole journey has honestly, it's been like that. Like, I've been riding so much, and the amount of time I've been on a bike for 3 years and racing, I have accelerated a lot. And so, like, yeah, Moto America was stressful at the start, but then once I got to go out to Europe and see IUM, because Mike actually saw us trying to do Moto 2, and it was a bad thing, and he saw it. But even now, like, up to this competition, it's very serious, and it's very, like, I want this. Like, this year I'm very ready. So I have to say, like, here way more stressful than a Moto America for sure.
Wow. And is that because you put the pressure on, or is that pressure from the position you're in, do you think?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I do put a lot of pressure on myself sometimes when I just need to relax and just do what I need to do. But sometimes it can be pressure from other stuff happening on track, or, you know, just things you're thinking about. But I think, yeah, it's both for me, to be honest. You know,
I think it's it might be one of those things that you'll probably, you might even forget about it when you get older, or maybe as you get more experience you might not be so critical, because I think everyone, anything, when they're so passionate, want to do well, you're your own biggest critic.
Yeah.
And I think that makes a lot of sense as well. We were talking briefly earlier, which we'll get into later, but like crashes and things, you know, I'm guessing you put the onus on yourself and you have to think that I've got to do better. That's, you know, that's on me.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. You know, like every crash has its own inference, but as long as you learn the mistake you have like done to do that crash or something, hopefully you learn it and it doesn't happen again, but it can still happen, you know? But yes, it's very stressful.
Yeah, it's the inevitables of racing, isn't it? And I think what else is inevitable is the amount of effort you put into it. So for you, I imagine you do a lot of training. You look like you're in good shape as well. I'm guessing you have a lot of strict training regimes and diets, etc. Do you have anything particular?
I mean, honestly, you know, like, I really do training. I do all my work. You know, I try, when I'm over in Spain, I go cycling with, Mike, my crew chief, and like we do cycling in the mountains, some enduro, like that's usually my training when I'm over here. But back at home, man, I'm usually in the gym, like I'm in the gym lifting weights or on the cycle bike. I'll sit on the cycle bike, and, the diet's okay. It's still better. I'm still expanding my palate just a little bit in food. But I do have a good racer's diet when I'm at the track. Like, I try and eat healthy, clean, whatever's going to give me energy, carbs, whatever, you know.
Yeah. And do you anchor for Australian food? Or because you've been in America so long, you live in America, you're thinking more?
Yeah. I mean, the American food it's all bad nowadays. Like, you know, the food over here is way cleaner. So it is, like, hard to adapt between, like, all the foods because I go from state to state. Like, I'm everywhere. So it's definitely different. Like I love the sugaries and the crap food, of course.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. But once season starts, you know, you gotta start trying to train your body and eat healthy and have your diet, you know.
And do you have a favorite cheat meal that, you know, you just say, you know what, I can't be bothered today, I'm gonna treat myself?
Ooh, like for lunch, a nice like In-N-Out burger. Like
In-N-Out. Oh, okay. I've never tried that. I've never been to America, so.
If you ever go, mate, that's the first place you have to go.
Straight away.
That's where
straight off the plane.
Off the plane, get home. That's my first place to go, depending on where, what time it is.
And what's your order?
What's my I get two cheeseburgers with onions and then fries.
That's relatively respectable. Have you got a favorite drink as well, or just not bothered?
Honestly, water.
Oh, really? Just straight water?
Yeah, I stopped drinking soda about 3 months ago, and I actually, believe it or not, when I was in Australia a couple of weeks ago, I tried, like, I bought myself a Coke, and I took one sip, and I just was not a fan, so I just threw it out. So now I just strictly drink water.
Now, this is a random question, but the opportunity is, so I'm asking it. You know the Monster Energy, the Aussie Lemonade?
Oh, yes, yes.
Does Aussie Lemonade actually taste like that?
Slightly different. Slightly different.
Better or worse?
I think, honestly, I'd say better. I'd say better.
Okay.
But it's still, you can, like, if you taste the two difference, you'll taste it. You'll be like, oh, okay, like, this is close. Like, it's really close. I like it. I was drinking it a while, but I try to get off that stuff.
That's something I'm going to have. If I ever go to Phillip Island or something like that, I'm going and I'm going to get a proper lemonade from Australia.
Do that. They're lemon. Perfect. It's amazing over there. I love it.
That's awesome. I'm definitely going to try it, and I'm going to do it for you, and I'll make sure I give you a toast for it.
Yeah, on Instagram, okay? At the Phillip Island, you know, enjoying lemonade.
I'm guessing you've ridden on Phillip Island once or twice, right?
I have, yeah. Been on Phillip Island quite a bit. So, like, 4 times. So,
oh, wow. It looks unbelievable. How is it?
Hands down, my favorite track in the world.
That was a question I was going to ask you later, so I'm going to ask you again later just in case. But still, I kind of expected that.
It's just such a beautiful track. Like, the grip's amazing. The layout is just so flowy and everything. Every time you hit something perfect, it just feels amazing. Right? It's just the best track. It's so fast. I love it.
How fast is turn one on the actual bike? How does it feel?
It's sometimes with the wind, pretty scary, because the wind pushes the front. But it's fifth gear pinned, practically going through. Like, you only downshift one gear, use like 2 bar brake pressure. As soon as you get off the brake, you stop building straight back to full throttle again.
It's a dream, isn't it?
It's such a dream. It's such a dream. And I try and tell people that are in Australia and they're riding bikes to go hit the track if they can. You know, it's one of a kind of a track.
And to hear you as a rider who competes in probably quite fierce battles, especially in your category in the Junior GP in the stock class,
yeah.
To hear you say the word scary, to me, is petrifying more than scary. But for you guys to feel it's scary, how bloody scary must that be in turn one?
Yeah. That was a scary one. You know, man. I don't even know. It was brutal. That's for sure. It's never a good feeling. That's for sure.
It looks terrific, and the seeing the bikes go on it, you know, it gives you a sense of just absolute admiration for every rider who's been on that track and done it.
100%. You know, it's kind of cool to like know, like, oh, I'm on the track, and you know, MotoGP guys ride this track, and you know, World Superbike ride this track. You know,
like that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. Like, we rode with the World Superbike guys. Like, we had them at the track racing when we were racing ASBK.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. We were pitted right behind Top Rack.
And wow.
Top is one of a kind of a guy. Such a nice guy.
If you could take his braking, would you go for something else?
I would go for that braking. Hands down. The confidence he has. Like, never seen anyone just go as deep as that guy. He breaks so deep.
It's computer game stuff, isn't it?
I don't even know, man. He just front wheel just feeling comfortable and like, you know, he just makes it. Just stopped and still makes the corner. I'm like, dude, it's incredible to see.
Every single time I watch it on the television, or I've even seen it in person when I went to Donington Park, and it is literally so bizarre because he's so in control as well.
Yes.
But how?
I don't even know. And like, even because his backstory, Top Rack, actually, he never raced as a kid. He used to be a stunt rider. That's why.
Oh.
He's in nose wheelies and all that stuff. He used to be a stunt rider.
Yeah, because that makes a lot of sense because of his antics with, you know, like balancing on the chairs, doing the wheelies, the stoppies. Yeah. Even with anything like push bikes, he's still doing the same things.
Exactly. Yeah.
Crazy.
It's crazy.
And- And what was your beginning getting into bikes? How did you start it? Did you know that bikes were going to be your thing and I'm going to race, or was it something else?
It was something else, to be honest. Like, growing up as a kid, I was always playing sports, basketball, of course. My dad used to go ride Tasmania with his buddies, and I'd do the whole island, practically. And he'd do track days, and I rode dirt bikes and started riding dirt bikes, and that was going to be my passion, was to race dirt bikes.
Oh. Yeah,
but then my dad told me, he's like, hey, do you want to hop on a motorcycle and see which one you like first? Maybe you want to race one or the other. I was like, yeah, no worries. And I hopped on a bike, you know, going 180 miles an hour. And it was my favorite thing in the world. Just felt like freedom. So,
it changes a man, that, doesn't it?
it changes so fast. It changes so fast. And yeah, like, that's just how, after that, I was like, yep, I want to do this. Like, this is fun. And yeah, it just started happening.
Would you say your dad's been the biggest influence then in your racing career?
100%. You know, he never likes to force stuff on me and like pressure me into anything. But he came to me asking if I wanted to race. And, you know, I'm very happy for that day, because if I said no and didn't like go to the track, I could be anywhere at this point, you know? So my dad's the huge part in this role for sure.
That's awesome. And if you started with motocross, I mean, you might have ventured into that, but do you still do motocross nowadays? Even, it's a bit scary because obviously Martin's had that big accident, which we've heard before, etc.
Yes. Honestly, I stopped riding motocross after a big crash. I had a guy land on top of me. Like, as soon as we just scrubbed at the same time, and I scrubbed a little too much and just went straight over the top. So, and like, yeah, dirt bikes, honestly, like, every rider that I'm friends with or something that rides moto before season, like 2 weeks before season, crash and hurt themselves and they're out for the first couple of races. So, I just think dirt bikes are they're good tool, training tool, but honestly, like, before season or anything, it's just, they hurt.
And I imagine it's really difficult with you because you're in America when you and they are supercross mad.
I love the supercross out there as well. I want to tell him, can I get another motocross bike? And he just will not. He won't let me get the motocross bike.
It's probably for the best, but supercross looks so cool.
It looks so cool and it looks so much fun, but it's just brutal on the stuff.
And when you practiced MX in the past, was it just MX-style tracks, or did you try the indoor supercross styles?
Just the MX stuff. Like, we were looking at a couple of indoor, but it was mainly MX. Let's just keep learning, get fast. Mainly stuck outdoors.
And speaking of the training side of it, are you still using other bikes then? So maybe mini bikes and things, or is it just mostly focusing on what you've got?
So, yeah, like, I train on the Supermoto whenever I'm home. You know, whenever I can go on a flat track bike, I will. I go on a flat track. But mainly Supermoto. Like, it gets me on the bike, it gets me out, just keeps me, you know, up to date with what I got to do. So, but yeah, mainly Supermoto. That's it.
And what does that help with the most for your racing?
Honestly, I can't even say the 450, the Supermoto. If you're on a little bike, because I have a 120, I have a 150 as well, I'll take both of them, or a 250 as well, for cornering. Like, it helps a lot with cornering and braking and stuff.
Okay.
So that's where I find the little bikes help. But the 450s, honestly, like, it doesn't really help with anything. It's just something fun, another riding tool, you know, something that gets you out, you know. But why not have fun, you know, getting that thing super sideways, right? That's the fun part, you know?
I totally agree. And I think with anything when you're doing something you're passionate about, even if it's not obvious, you are still refining skills because it's still racing at the end of the day, still pushing on the limits.
Exactly. And that's what you do on the Supermotos. Like, you know, like every, I do, sometimes depending on who's at the track, like I would get 4 hours to the track myself. And I would just...
Wow.
I'd get the lady that would go inside, and I would ask her if I can do a 30-minute stint, and I just go bang out as many laps as I can in 30 minutes and just try and build endurance, honestly. Like, I mainly worry about endurance.
Yeah, because imagine throughout some of those tougher races, especially being in Europe, you're probably used to hot temperatures anyway, but I imagine in those really hot, temperate climates, you're going to be feeling the effects.
Yes, yes. Honestly, the heat over here in Spain is way, way hotter than Australia, America. Like, it's just crazy temperature over here. So
I know some of the tracks you go to as well, you are talking in some of the most, like, biggest locations for the heat hitting, you know, the plains of Spain, where it's killing you in a way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even like Portugal, like Portimão, holy, that was hot, like 45 or something, and we had to go do like an 18 and 60 lap race.
Pardon me. Wow.
And yeah, it's just so hot.
Just burned to death.
Oh yeah. You're sitting on the grid for 15 minutes and you're like, come on, let's start this race. Let's just go. Let's go on the ice path or something.
I'm glad you segued into that, because that was my next question. Actually, when you're actually on the grid, how do you handle those pre-race nerves? Do you have any particular superstitions or anything you think of, or maybe some music perhaps?
Yeah, so honestly, for me, because like I said at the start, like, I love talking to people. And so actually, speaking of Craig is Craig's my umbrella girl for me, practically. So, you know, I told Craig, for me, like, I can't sit there in silence and just stare straight or listen to music. I need to be laughing, and I need people to be like laughing with me or making jokes. So every time I go out on grid, like, Craig just pulls out this notebook filled of just jokes and stuff, and like, and I just, it makes me laugh. Like, I'm not focused, too worried about the pre-jitters. I still have them, but it gets me away from focusing about the grid for a little bit.
You know? Right. Have you got any examples of jokes, or are they not appropriate for the knee down podcast?
Not really appropriate for the knee down. Craig's always got so many dumb ones up his sleeve and stuff. They're not the greatest ones. I'll try and remember one for later, because he told me one. It was a dad joke. It was hilarious. I can't remember it. It was some track he said at Estoril. But a lot of people tell me, like, how can you, like, do that, you know, and not, like, be thinking of the race, which I understand should be thinking of the race doing all this. But when you're sitting on the grid for so long and you're just sitting there in silence and everyone's silence, like, it just doesn't work for me. It just makes me think too much of the race, gets me in my head too much. At least when I have someone joking around with me or talking or something, it keeps me away from the pre-race jitters. But then once that light goes out, pre-race jitters are gone. It's just all...
Yeah, it's straight focus.
Exactly.
I'd probably say it's akin to, like, for example, even the podcast, you know, as little as that. You know, you're thinking, well, I hope it goes well, you know, I hope I can get the right questions and stuff like that. But when you're in it, and you're having fun with it.
Exactly, yeah. You're having fun with it. You're not thinking of anything else besides that guy in front of you and what you need to do, honestly.
And I really feel that just because someone is super focused, don't talk to me, leave me alone, is no different to the person who wants to chat. It's just their way of dealing with it.
Exactly. Everyone has a different way that works for them, you know? Like, everyone's got different ways. You know, it's just the way it works for me, at least.
A close friend of mine, Sergio, he was telling me his approach to racing was always, just leave me alone. I'm focusing. Don't talk to me. Just leave me alone. I'm racing.
Honestly, that was like my old teammate, Dino. Dino's the same way. Like, when I was injured in Aragon, he'd be sitting on the grid and, like, no one would be talking. He'd just be staring straight. And, like, I'm like, oh my gosh. He doesn't like it when people talk to him on grid.
Have you tried the both... approaches? Have you tried the chatting and then, well, of course you tried the chatting one, but have you tried the just laser focus?
Yeah, gets me very nervous.
Did you find it affected you in the race?
Not really affect me in the race, like, affected the start of the race, like, didn't give me a lot of confidence on the first two laps, where those are, like, the most promising laps you need, like, start of the race and at the end of the race, like, those last two, three laps or the first three laps, that's where it's promising. But yeah, when I was too quiet and just stood straight, like the first two laps of a couple of races were just brutal. I'd just get hammered.
That's amazing. It's just something. It shows the level of concentration, and the competition is so high that you need to be absolutely perfect in every single way to be competitive and to have the best chance for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
with your team, how do you come across with discussing data and things like telemetry and stuff like that? Is it a case of you're very hands-on, or do they bring it over to you and say, listen, this, this, and this? Or how does it work for you?
You know, for me, honestly, like, we do the same thing, like, as everyone else, I think, I guess. But, yeah, like, we'll go in, we get 40 minutes a session, go out, do 8 laps, come in, take 5 minutes, go out again. We'll try and find something after 8 laps and see what we can change to the bike. And, you know, sit down, look at data, talk about what's happening, what's going on, what we're feeling, what kind of changes we think that's going to be better. Because you only get 2 days of practice and 40-minute 2 sessions a day. So you're really trying to get the bike set up as much as you can. So, looking at data of how much you're spinning on the rear, what's your throttle, braking position, what's suspension doing. We all come in and we just sit at the table. Like, we have our table right there, and Mike is always on the computer. He'll just take our data out of the bikes and we'll look over it and see what we can change to go faster, or we think that will be better. So, that's really it for data, dude, right there.
So how much would you say for the average person it takes to look at the data and begin to gain a good understanding of it? I imagine for someone like myself who's not really dealt with that, it's going to look quite alien.
It's going to, yes, vary. All you're going to, like, people that have never seen data before and have never seen, like, what the computer is for the bikes, like, they just look at the screen and they see all these lines doing, like, all these things, and you're like, well, what are these lines even, you know? And so, like, even me, like, it took me a while to understand data, and, like, I understand it now because Mike has helped me so much for it, so I understand data now. But even, like, the brains that you have to, like, think of, like, when you're doing this data, it's unbelievable. Like, see what you're looking for, what's going on, but it's definitely hard to figure out, that's for sure.
I've seen it on the computer game for MotoGP 24, and it's very bog standard, it's very basic, but yeah, to me it doesn't make much sense, I'll be honest.
Yeah,
okay. For someone like yourself who's experiencing that and they're picking out things, I imagine it can be quite pivotal to your success. And does it always correlate that way? I mean, is there a possibility that you look at the data and go, oh, well, I should be doing this, and then it's backwards? Is that possible for you guys?
I honestly, not over here in Spain. It's happened a couple of times. It rarely happens, but it did happen a couple of times to me in Australia, where the data bogged out or something was wrong and it did go backwards. But in Spain, usually what kind we use, it actually, we never really have a bug. Sometimes it will only, like, the whole screen will just go frozen and then crash and just give you something different. But Mike's been doing it for so long on this data stuff, he knows when there's a problem and he knows when.
Right. Yeah.
So it doesn't happen for me over in Spain, you know?
So. And do you practice with your teammate on the track as well? Do you work together, or is it a case? Cause obviously, Dino's moved on now, hasn't he? So you've got Tibor now as your brand new teammate.
Yes.
Are you going to work together and to let it correlate in both your performances, or is it a case of you just got to feel each other out and work it out?
Honestly, like, I want to do the... I'm hoping to do the teammate thing, like what me and Dino did last year. You know, following each other, helping each other, you know, because the goal is to get 2 IUM bikes on the podium. That would be sick. Nothing beats having 2 of the team bikes on podium. So it's definitely something I would like to do the teaming thing. I'll have to see when we go to Jerez next week for ESPK and see what the deal is. I've talked to Tibor a couple of times. He's a really nice kid and cool. So I think he'll probably want to do that. I don't know. But I'll have to just, you know, scope it out and find out. But if we can do the same thing as me and Dino did last year, I'm happy. But if we all want to do our separate thing, we'll do our separate thing.
Yeah, of course. It's just that you take it as you go, don't you? And you analyze the situation as that we're in them. But as someone who admires that team aspect, I think I would be very much the same. I think it's more important to have both of you pushing each other to get to that next level rather than butting heads.
Exactly, you know, and like this team like is a family team, you know, like we're all here for each other, we all love each other, you know, we're all friends, so we don't want to have any problems, so we try and like be friends. That's what we want, so we want everything to work out. We don't want any of us going knuckle, you know, with our heads, you know, and like sometimes
I agree.
Riders, but you know.
Yeah, because riders are, I think, in any form of business, there's a lot of personalities to clash, and everyone is so determined. I mean, I was reading something from Scott Redding a few days ago, and his idea was he didn't want to be friends with people. They're his rivals. And then there's some people who's like, hey, let's all be successful together.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree. You know, like, of course, like, I won't lie, like, it's completely honesty, like, for me at least, like, having some teammates, like, I feel like four riders, yes, there's some jealousy. Like, it's like, okay, even though he's my teammate, cool, working together, but I still don't want my teammate to lose against me. I don't want to lose against my teammate.
Of course.
You know, I've had that a couple of times, but I've moved on with that. It's like, okay, whatever. Like, that just means I need to be better. I got to do something different. You know, but why don't we both just, instead of getting mad at each other, who's beating who, let's just work together and try and beat everyone, you know?
Yeah, combine that motivation.
Exactly. So, you know, and I think it really helps. I think working together with your teammate is actually the perfect thing.
So when you're working in there with the teammate or even by yourself, do you have a specific tire compound or tire in general you prefer to use? Is something that works well for you, and maybe the teammate's like, nah, I don't like that tire, or...
So that's where I put all my trusts with Uncle Mike, because Mike does, we always talk about tires, and Mike gives us the opportunity to pick which tire we want to go with if we want to go something different. But depending on heat, track temperature, grip on the track, grip level, but honestly, like, I think SC0s I love when they're brand new, but we usually just whatever tire, both the teammates are on the same tires, usually.
And that's the harder version of the tire, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so you like that sense of the extra tougher compound. Does it transition that well when you're on the bike? Does it feel significantly different, or is it a case of just on the brakes?
Definitely. Honestly, nothing on the brakes, really. It's more of the throttle, like on throttle, like on a new tire, you can just hammer it, the throttle to full, and nothing's going to happen. It's just got so much grip. It will grip up and just spin and go. But as the tire starts to hit 14 laps, 15 laps, that's when you have to really cut it back a little bit and figure out how to use the tire and ride the tire. Because once it starts spinning, it spins a lot, and it's just, it's very, for me right now, it's a little bit hard to control on the right side.
Right, I see.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to Eddie last time we had him on, and obviously everybody knows that the likes of Marc Márquez has a preference on tyres.
Yes.
Side of the tyres, let's say. So do you have a preference on which side of the bike that you prefer? Do you prefer turning left or turning right?
Definitely turning the left side.
Okay.
So the left side, like, is always, I've always had a strong suit, but I've had a lot of crashes on the right side. So the right side kind of threw me off for a little bit.
So I guess that makes perfect sense. And a couple of crashes on the right side, and that basically just clarifies that it's not the side for you.
Exactly. It just tells me that I'm like, yeah, no, I'm going to, I got to practice this left side, or the right side more.
And how would you practice the right side? Is it as simple as just we got to get on those right-hand sides and usually push that little bit further and find the limit? Or is there a specific way of doing it?
Definitely, like, figuring out mainly, like, why are you afraid on the right side, and what, what happened to make you, like, get to that point? So, and you just kind of got to figure out go through the process after. It's like going through the process after a crash. Like, you just got to figure out what you did wrong. And it's like, okay, you can practice by, like, just slowly building stuff. Like, for me, it's spinning on the right and trying to trust the electronics. So, like, just trying a little bit, like, each, like, 10% throttle opening, you just keep chipping away
until it starts to, like, get comfortable for you, I guess.
Right, I see. So it's more about the mental side, you think, than actual ability?
Yes, yeah, definitely, 100%. Because usually it's like, you know, your brain tells you, like, it tells you yes. Like, the brain says yes, but your throttle hand says no.
Yeah.
The annoying part, for sure.
I can imagine. It's like reaching out to someone and asking them, or asking a girl on a date, you know, you think you're going to do it, but then when you get there, you're like, I'll ask another day.
I don't see her or something, yeah. No, it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same, I swear.
Very fascinating, because I think I always thought, oh, maybe it's like, you know, maybe, because what I've heard in the past is some riders, you know, right-handed, they struggle on that right hand side, because when they're in, they can't feel the movement. And then on the other side, if they're left-handed, they might enjoy that, because their dominant hand is available to use, if that makes sense.
Yes, so especially on the left side, because I'm dominant on the left hand, of course. But honestly, having my elbow on the ground, like, it feels perfect. Like, I feel so safe and secure, because it's just like I have more control and I can actually do anything with my left arm. Like, I can push, if I'm tucking the front, I can actually push my elbow to recorrect it or something. So,
right, yeah, I see. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I like it. So the right hand's definitely hard to get to, because it's also your throttle hand. So you have to worry about the throttle. So,
would you ever consider the Mattia Pacini way, where he swapped over the throttle side?
You know how crazy that is?
No.
I'm like, holy crap, how do you do that?
How do you do it on the podium numerous times with that setup as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think there was, I don't know if it was him, but it was someone else that had brake on the other side as well. I think it was him that had the brake on the opposite side as well.
I think it was, because he really damaged his right hand, so he couldn't have any power. It must have been Mattia.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but crazy. I don't know how you do that.
And he was, what, mid-20s when he changed over. So all those years of experience to change over.
Yeah.
Could you imagine you doing it now?
No, no way.
However, I will say, Declan, I guarantee it, God forbid, if something happened to your right hand, you would adapt, and you'd adapt quickly because you'd want to.
Exactly, yep, you know what? I agree with you there. Yep.
You would be so motivated, you'd be just like, okay, who cares about the right hand? I've got my left.
We're going to have to do it. Exactly. Yeah, very true. I agree with you on that for sure.
So I thought I'd do something fun here and have some quick fire questions. I hope you're ready for this.
Fire questions.
So don't take too long to think. Just say what's on top of your mind and let's see what we can come up with. So first things first, best thing about racing in Europe?
Best thing? Oh, man, the League of Riders, like the field.
Okay, so the competition.
Competition.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Favorite track on the Junior GP calendar?
Barcelona.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Double down on that one. Isn't that where you had your big crash? No, it wasn't. Was it Estoril or Catalunya you had that big crash?
Estoril was the big crash, last round.
Yeah, we'll get to that conversation later. wet race or dry race?
Dry. I do well in the over here, but like dry, always dry.
One thing you miss most about being away from home, albeit America or Australia?
Family.
If you weren't a racer, what do you reckon you'd be doing? You mentioned earlier some basketball and those other sports. Do you reckon you'd be doing something like that?
Other sports, probably like MMA or, you know, jiu-jitsu, boxing, something like that.
Okay. Are you into that? You actually practice that as well, do you?
Yeah, I used to do jiu-jitsu as a kid, 15 years old, and then I like boxing and stuff, so I like all the MMA stuff. So.
Nice. I guess it makes sense. You like the contact racing, so there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a go-to pre-hype song?
Ooh, I do, actually. What is the name of it? It's a house song. I listen to house music before going out for a race. It's bad.
Let me know what it is afterwards and I'll put it on the, on the clip.
Yeah, no worries.
That way people know what it is. Cause I'm actually genuinely curious. It's probably not my kind of music, but still I'm curious.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I got it. Atmosphere by Fisher.
There you go. I have no idea.
It's really.
Well, I'm gonna look it up just for you.
Yeah, look it up and see if you like it or not.
I will take a look. Most embarrassing moment on a bike.
Most embarrassing moment on a bike. Definitely like getting angry at a rider, turning around, and like giving him a hand gesture and running off track at the same time.
Oh, which probably made you more angry.
Mm-hmm. It was very, very embarrassing.
So you're like this.
Yep.
And then you're gone.
Oh crap, there's gravel and all there.
Oh no, I can feel the secondhand embarrassment. I feel that now.
That's too many embarrassed moments.
And favorite sporting moment or racing moment that wasn't in Junior GP?
That wasn't in Junior GP. My favorite racing moment. Honestly, like when I got third place in New Zealand, it was my first time being back on the podium for a while. And yeah, just the wind was high. Everyone was nervous of the wind. I went from like I think it was P6 or something. And just as the race, the last lap, I picked off two guys on the two last corners and crossed the line in third.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it was my favorite.
And would you rather win in a dogfight or comfortably miles ahead of everyone else?
Dogfight.
Yeah, last corner lunge.
Yep. Do it. Yeah. You know, it's going to work and stick or it's not.
I hope we get to see the Rossi lunge, but the Declan version this year in Catalonia.
It's going to come. It's going to come soon.
I'll be screaming.
I've tried a couple of times. I'll try again.
How bad is that overtake, that corner? Is it really crazy to do?
Depending on where the person breaks, yes. Like, it's a huge lunge, but at the same time, you make it stick and hopefully make the rider go a little bit wide. And you can get on it fast enough. It's just who can beat to the line, but it's a very big lunge. Like, but you just got to know, like, if you do an early race, you know you're going to lose some time on the exit. They're going to catch you. But if it's on the last lap, you try and make it so the dude can't get behind your rear tire. Like, he's a little bit further back.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Because yeah. In that moment, well, that's it, the race is ended. As long as you get to that line, you've done it, haven't you?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So final question then of the quickfire one is your favorite moment in Junior GP?
My favorite moment in Junior GP, the team, you know? Got a lot of fun moments with the team. Team's my favorite. They're amazing.
That's awesome. That's such a nice thing to say.
Yeah. Team's family. They're amazing.
So from the positives to a little bit of a negative, we touched base upon this earlier regarding a scary moment. Now, I had the privilege of hearing this firsthand from you a moment ago, but your scariest racing moment, is that the scariest racing moment, or do you have something else, or is it definitely this high side?
The scariest one so far actually has been the foot peg going through my arm. That one's been the scariest one. It's hard to see, but that vein right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a foot peg go right through. It's hard to see, but there's like a huge scar there with stitches and stuff.
Oh my goodness.
But still, yeah, the high side's my scariest one, I think, still. Both of them.
And how did the foot peg get into there? What happened in that situation?
So, at Aragon, I don't know if you actually heard, but when you were watching the GP probably, did you see how some of the boys would go a little bit offline and they'd lose the whole bike? And like crash and stuff.
Not too familiar with Junior GP. This is my first year of proper watching it fully. So when it starts in May, I'm going to be glued to it.
Okay, there we go. So last year they resurfaced the track, and the GP boys were the first ones on, and the track was very slippery. And I did testing there, like the week before the race, and a little hair offline is. It's crash, like it's hala high sides or whatever, and like this is the first day of Junior GP, opening day Thursday, and I go out on the open lap, first warm-up, first practice, trying to catch up to Dino because we were going to follow each other. And I pass someone on the outside just a hair offline. One, two, three, like that fast kink.
Four. Oh, the checker corner.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've got you.
Tad offline, and the thing just went sideways and flew. Like, didn't get a chance to save it. Just went. I landed. I went face into the tire, landed on the ground, started doing tumbles, and then saw the bike just land on top of me, and the foot peg just went straight through.
Straight through the leather, straight through your skin. Straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting up was, it was not pretty. Like, I woke up shaking my head. Like, I was like, holy crap, what happened? And the next thing you know, I see blood everywhere, and I'm like, what's going on? I look at my arm, and I just see this freaking foot peg in my arm. And I just pull out the foot peg. I get in the ambulance, and Craig's first words, because Craig was doing video. He was doing the photography and stuff. Comes up to the ambulance. He goes, wasn't that fucking stupid move? Just wrecked my arm, man. Just hurt myself.
Oh, no. But I think, knowing your personality with him, I don't think he'd want it to be any other way.
No. I actually laughed. I had a laugh.
Oh, wow. And then the high side in Estoril. Like, oh, those are two monumental crashes. Probably riders may have that, but probably never. Maybe stop racing after those sort of instances.
Yeah. I won't lie. That Estoril crash, it made me rethink just a little bit on like what I really wanted to do, because that put me down for a month. Like, just sore pain, like not being able to sit or anything, and just screwing with my brain the whole time, you know?
Wow, that is crazy. Yeah. And how do you deal with that off track? Is it the family? Obviously, you mentioned family a lot. I'm guessing they're really supportive and they have your back in a lot of these situations.
Very supportive, yes. They'll all have my back, you know, always chatting to me. You know, my dad, mostly, he's the one that supports the most. So he's always there. And, you know, he felt my pain after that crash and what we went through after and stuff like that. But, yeah, family, they're the biggest supporters, family, for sure.
Because they know for a fact that how much you want it and how much you want to develop and improve. And if they were to coddle it and say, maybe you should stop, it's not going to do you what you want.
Exactly. So, you know, and it's like, I don't want to stop. I never will. Like, I don't want to. But, you know, some of these crashes bring people to that point, you know.
Just can't
get out of their head, or something that just hurt too much.
And how many people have you told about the story about the foot peg in your arm and things like that? And without, how many have winced like I did? And how many people have winced listening to this podcast or even watching right now and thought, oh, God damn it.
Oh, man. Actually, a lot that like swipe or like comment on my stuff, or like my best friends or fans or something like that. Like, I actually have a lot of people ask, and especially even like when I'm at the gym or something, I've had some people watch me lift and just come up to me and say, what happened to your arm, dude? Like, I'm sitting there, like, explaining. Yeah. So, but I've told quite a bit that have asked.
I can imagine you in the gym. You're doing your thing, and they say, oh, you know, Declan, well, they don't know you, and they say, what's happened? You go, come here.
Yeah.
Sit down and let me talk to you for a second.
Exactly, yeah. Show them photos. Yeah. It's just the most awkwardest thing, too. It's like you're mid workout and some random person comes up at the gym. Just what happened?
I mean, I credit to them for being curious enough to ask.
I agree, right? Balls to do that.
But there's probably a part of you that thinks, you know what? I'm kind of glad I can tell that story, because that's an incredible moment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a very.
And it shows you resilience.
Yes. A lot. A lot of it.
Because I imagine there's so many riders out there that have had huge, monumental crashes. And in fact, we see it all the time. Big riders are incredible. Big crashes are never the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, even one of Dino's mates, Brett Roberts, he'd come into our pits all the time. They were best friends. He had a high side at Estoril coming out of on the exit of one, but like straight up and down. And he smacked his head really hard and can't race anymore.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's
like, yeah. Crazy. I have absolute admiration. I was saying last time, you know, to many other riders and anyone from whatever discipline you're in, whatever level you're at, you guys are something else.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the mere mortal sitting here with the privilege to ask you these questions. You guys are the aliens. No matter where you are in what sport, you're an alien to do stuff like you do.
I appreciate that. It's, yeah, it's no brain, no pain, I guess, eh?
Yeah, just switch off and just go for it, I guess.
Exactly.
So for this humble fan, and for many of the humble fans watching, and there's probably races out there as well, what's the most underrated skill or thing that we don't notice about the riding and about the riders that maybe we don't pick up on and you guys probably use every day and do to improve your riding? And that could be something on a mental level or some sort of skill or training that is just not aware of for the common viewer.
Yeah, you know, really good question, actually. Because there's a lot of different stuff. Honestly, some mental. What's one that I like? I was just picturing stuff before, like, a race, like on Supermoto or something like that. Like, treat like a corner, on what track you're having problems with. Like, that, take that kind of corner and do the same thing, you know? But it's all, like, little things, like mind stuff, mind games, what you're thinking and what you're thinking of other riders on the track, you know? Like, I don't really know what other people have, but I don't really have anything that I do different compared to a lot of other riders, I think.
And I think the beauty of it is it's, you probably do, but it's so normal to you that we would probably be surprised if you said it. But yeah, it's unlocking that, well, I do it every day. This is the life I live, where, yeah, I'm thinking, what would you do in this situation? What would you do in that situation? And I guess that makes the difference.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
But yeah, there's nothing one thing. I would actually say, even from the little tip that you just gave me there, that visualizing the track, visualizing that moment of, it might not be the exact same corner, but I'm tackling it in a similar way, giving yourself I don't want to say a false confidence, but it is giving you a confidence for that when you next tackle it.
Exactly, yes. Yes. So, and I always got taught, I still, even when I do track walks, I still abide by, I used to train with Tony Elias, and so okay. He always told me his three-step rule that he does at the race when he does track walks. So, like, each corner that he has, that's different corner, he calls it A, B, or C, or D. And so whenever he's on track, he always learns to track fast because he has these A, B, C, or D for each corner that he makes it. And he goes, okay, I'm showing up on a D corner or an A corner. So then he already knows what he needs to do and stuff like that. So I try and I do that as much as I can. Like, that's one tool that helps me, I think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because you're effectively grading your performance in certain parts that you feel like you need to improve upon, I guess, and prioritizing what needs to be focused on.
Yes, yeah.
That's fascinating. Of course, Tony Elias is very good in Estoril, which we have seen in the past, so...
Very, very good.
One to learn from in that track. That is something perfect. For you, that probably makes like normal sense. It's something that, yeah, obviously, but... I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, yeah. No, when he told me about it too, I was like, well, okay. All right. Not once did I think to even try, like, think of something like that, or, you know?
Yeah, that's really fascinating because I'm guessing you now do that and you go, with you also being critical on yourself because you're your own biggest motivation, you might think, oh, I was crap in that corner, really pathetic in that corner, when you're actually probably pretty good.
Yeah.
But the
motivation
and that determination says, I want to go even more.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely had that many times.
What's the most recent example could you give?
Most recent one was Phillip Island. Phillip Island for ASBK. Turn three. Like, the wind shift would change. And, like, usually you'd be able to go there through there full throttle on the 600, like, six gear pinned. And there was a couple of times where I was, like, half throttle. And, like, a lot of the other riders were, like, a couple of my teammates, they would be off throttle, let the bike steer, and I would only be half throttle. And I'd come in and I'd like be super angry and annoyed. And I'd be like, I can't get this right. I can't be full throttle. And I'll get told from the crew chief, like, yeah, but you're going half throttle, and a lot of riders you're riding around and seeing on the GoPro camera, they're rolling off to get the bike turned while you're doing half throttle, half throttle through. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense, but, you know.
It's so simple on paper.
Right, right, right.
And that's the stoner corner, so that is rapid to the left-hand side, yeah?
Yes, yeah. Stoner corner is so fun.
From a fan's perspective, I would think full throttle.
Yeah?
From a fan's perspective. But the key, obviously, is the man who's on the motorbike, he goes, no, because I'm probably spinning the rear, or I'm running too wide, and...
Yeah, yeah. I actually find it, the way Casey Stoner did it was perfect, because now everyone just spins through there. You have to spin through there. Like, the only way to turn the bike. Like, everyone starts to feel the rear, like, slide and stuff, and they think something's going to happen, so they roll off. But, like, the more you just hold it open, the more it just spins and just drives it forward, you know, for that.
And could you describe what it feels like to have the rear just kick out ever so slightly in that corner?
Oh, it's just so much fun. You feel it, like, you start feeling it slide, and then it comes out wider. And then when it comes out wider, like you're backing it in, you just feel this sensation where you feel the tire stop sliding and grip. And you feel like this little jump, like you jump off the line a little bit. And you just feel this move, and it's just, I don't know, it's so fast. I love it. I love the feeling every time. As soon as it starts spinning sideways and then just hooks up and grips, it just, I don't know. It just puts something in my brain that's made, I like it.
So it's not fear, it's just pure enjoyment.
Yeah, pure enjoyment. It's fear on the right side, that's for sure. Fear on the right side, but left side, I have a real strong point with letting the rear slide on the left side.
Right, I see. Yeah. Because from a television perspective and from cameras and being watching there as well, and it is incredible to see a bike, you know, kick out. You know, I've been to Donington many times to see going into Hollywood and then down to the Craner Curves, the kicking it, and it's just like, oh, so magnifique. Just gorgeous.
It's beautiful. And I give it to a lot of riders, though, because not a lot of people understand, too. It's like, the trust that you have to have in your electronics, like the trust you need for the bike. Like I used to trust my electronics a lot until I didn't. And then like, even now, like I trust him, like, cause I know Mike does an amazing job at everything he does. Perfect. And he keeps telling me every time I make the mistake, he's like, dude, trust the electronics, trust them. I'm like, okay, I'm trying to, I can trust it on the left side. So I'm like, okay, it works on the left side. So right side will be fine. But just like watching some of these riders and stuff do the thing, the amount of trust that they have in their electronics, it's unbearable. It's nice. It's crazy.
You know? And for yourself, is it a case of you tweak the electronics as you go? So maybe you reduce the traction control or you increase engine brake and things. Is it a case that a rider... Well, I'm going to want more interest in asking you, actually. So how about yourself? Is it a sense of reluctancy to change, or is it you're happy to change it and see what happens?
Me? Yeah, I like doing changes, whatever the crew chief thinks is going to be better or faster or better for me. But at the same time, they can only control so much in the engine braking and all that. So they put it to where they feel like they need. And then traction control, I get to play with myself. I can click whatever button I want, change maps, do different maps if I want to. But I'm a very open guy. I don't mind trying stuff, learning something new. You want me to go out and do something and try it? I'll do it. You know, I'm very
open. It must be a pleasure to coach in that regard then, because if you're so open to try it.
Yeah.
You're going to have good results, aren't you? Where some people, I do imagine there are probably people out there who do get stuck in their ways.
Yes, they do. Yes, 100%. And it's kind of hard to get some of those riders and some people out of that. You know, because then they get stuck in that and they always think it's going to work or help or something until where they start having problems, you know.
And at that point, it's too long gone in a way.
Exactly. Never
makes
funny.
A lot of sense. And human nature is that we do tend to be very consistent. We do stay in our habits.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And how often would you say you try that during practice? How often would you say that you'll click the traction control and try different modes and think, that worked, that didn't work? And
yeah, definitely like on a new tire or on an old tire, definitely, just to see where the limit's at on the rear tire. I just want to see how much grip I can actually get with pushing with the traction control on. But I'm honestly, I try and use it every session if I can.
That's really interesting, and I'm guessing there is a benefit to doing that, as in to also learn that point of, whoa, this bike is really slippery now, but I've got that nice smooth control.
Yeah.
I guess it's reinforcing what you're doing and having that muscle memory to make sure that if it gets into a situation, you can handle it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah, exactly right.
So when you're back in, you're doing ASBK, I imagine the family's with you quite often. I'm guessing they're always there to support you.
Honestly, no, they're because they're in the States. So the family lives in the States. So
okay.
I left Australia when I was 7 years old and moved to the States. So I've been living in the States for 12 years, but my parents have come over. They came over to the Australian round for ASBK because they wanted to watch Phillip Island, of course. So they came over for that race. But yeah, they try and come out whenever they can. It's just work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
All those racing bills.
And do you get a boost when they're there, or is it a case of you actually feel a little bit more distracted when they're there?
Honestly, I think in the paddock, like when I'm trying to do stuff in the paddock, I get a little distracted because I obviously just want to see them and talk to them more importantly. But I don't feel really like anything when they're with me. Like at the track, sometimes they think that they feel I'm feeling nervous, or I think I'm going to try and do something while they're there because they're watching. But I really don't think of any of it. Like, I love seeing them here and wanting to watch and come and support me, of course. But once the lights go out and stuff like that, I don't think of anything besides who's in front of me.
It's that racing mentality, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, you know. Sometimes I like getting a big boot in the ass, though, from my dad sometimes before the race, though. He'll yell at me a little bit to get it before the race. So, you know, but, you know, all it's good stuff.
So in those moments where you've either had a great race or not so great, how do you deal with positive and negative messages from fans, competitors, family?
I'm pretty good in that state. Like, when something's good, a good race has happened, whoever I've raced with, like, we'll chat, whatever, or we'll go over to each other's boxes, chat, depending on who and what it is. You know, give each other handshakes and stuff like that, whatever. But I guess like in a good race, everyone's having fun. Whoever's at the front, whoever enjoyed the race, at least, like, I love the race. But bad races, like, it's hard for me sometimes. Like, I can still do everything that I just did, but depending on how bad the race is, sometimes I just gotta, like, kind of walk away for like 10 minutes, 5 minutes, and just calm down, relax myself, you know? So I just need to think of what just happened and what I've done and stuff like that.
And how long would you say the mental recovery is when you've had a bad weekend? Are you talking a few days just alone, just, you know, thinking about things and just getting back to normal?
Honestly, I try and let it go. I try and have that problem for Sunday, and Monday I usually have it just for Monday. Like, Monday is like, I'll let it sulk for a little bit, but by then, like, I keep trying to think to myself, like, okay, it is what it is. It's happened now. It's done. You can't do anything about it. You know, sulking isn't like getting mad about it, frustrated, thinking about it. It helps and doesn't help in some terms, but I don't think it really helps. So I try and get over it as soon as I can. I just know what I need to do to be better than what I did wrong. You know,
so no crying over spilt milk then.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep.
So, but on the flip side then, good weekend. Yes. How do you carry that momentum? Again, is it a case of even-keeled, let's reset for Sunday? Or is it still, oh, we're going to live this like forever because it was a great weekend?
Yeah, you know, and that's something I don't mind doing. Like, I don't want to get stuck. I would never want to get stuck in that. Usually I try and end it on Sunday if I can. Like, it's been a great race, whatever. Like, I've done really good. Let's talk about it for the night. Let's have fun for that night, whatever. But the next day, it's, let's get at it the next one. Like, we still got to, job's not done. We still got to keep going. Like, once it's over, then we can celebrate even more. Like, job's not done yet.
I love that mentality. It's a way of just staying even keeled, you know, not too high, not too low, just focused.
Exactly. Because, you know, like, I've seen a lot of, like, my friends that race and stuff. Like, some of them will get off a win and they'll like party for the night, you know, be celebrating, won't train, won't want to do anything or whatever. Lift up to the next race and get 10th or something like that, or 9th. And then they get mad at themselves even more because they're like, wow, how did I just go from this? And I just did this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're doing yourself a disservice, aren't you? Because you've taken away valuable training time to live, keep that going.
Exactly, you know? So there's a time where to live and have fun, enjoy what you've done. But when you got to realize sometimes that the job's not done, or, you know, there's something else to be done, you know?
And as a rider who's experienced this multiple times, I guess because every single race is either positive or negative, or maybe in between, what would be a lesson for younger riders in that situation, or to anyone who's actually starting off? Would you say it's something you can teach, or is it something you have to go through?
It's definitely something you can teach and go through at the same time. I mean, I guess when you've done it to like a new rider or something like that, obviously like someone that's very new, I would let them have the time of their life. Go enjoy it. Like, have fun. Do what you need to do. Like, it's your first win, like, ever, or whatever you've done. You know, it's your first race, whatever. But at some point after that win, it's like, okay, now you've done that. It's time to focus. You need to focus. Like, the job's still not done. So it's definitely both, I would say, like, going in between both. It can be teachable and go through it at the same time. But a lot of people change their mentalities after they've done the celebrating and all that, and they've had the problem when they come back.
Right, yeah.
But something I can teach, I think.
Makes a lot of sense. And something I picked up on from looking at your Instagram profile, and even from listening to you, you are a very driven person. You know, yeah. You come across very positive, really cool and relaxed, but the same mentality every other rider has, that driven mindset, that goal. And speaking of those goals, I noticed on your Instagram it says Journey to Moto 2 or The Road to Moto 2.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that? What's your plans and what are you thinking for the future?
Yeah, so, you know, like, that's, you know, GP is, it's a dream, you know? Only 25 riders get on the grid, you know? So it's a big dream. But, yeah, I definitely want to try and get to the Moto 2 paddock. That would be a dream for me. So, you know, I want to do really well this year on 600. Like, me and Mike got a lot of work to do this year, and we're actually very, very excited, and we're very excited to get the work started. So, yeah, I'm very excited for this season. I'm going to try and push as much as I can. I want to be very competitive. And, yeah, next year is time, you know, to go on the bigger bike, start learning the big bike. And, yeah, just try and learn for a year on the Moto 2, see what happens there. And hopefully in the next 2 or 3 years, maybe, hopefully, if I'm not doing anything, hurting myself or something.
No, definitely not. No.
Yeah. Right?
Moto 2. I'm too superstitious. I'm touching a wall. I'm touching things.
I'm knocking on wood right now. Cracking. Yeah.
Yeah, no, you'll get there, mate. I think so. I mean, you've got that mentality for it. You've got the personality that people should bottle.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. But for the Moto 2 and the aspects of that, is there a way you could train on those sorts of bikes, or is it simply a case of you only can train on those when you get there?
Honestly, like, you can train. I guess you could train on them to learn it and, like, figure out the bike. But I feel like the only way to do that is to, like, be over in Spain for the tracks, because the Moto 2s, I own one. We have one. We were supposed to do Moto 2 my first year in Junior GP, but we had a bad test day, and it was brutal. But those chassis are so stiff and so hard, like, any little bump, like, just does not absorb it. It just makes the whole bike get out of control. Like, it does a lot. So, I mean, you can get on one and try and train on it and learn, but it changes everything once you hop on a Moto 2. Once you get on it, body position's different, leaning off of it is different. It's a whole different bike, you know?
So I feel that's like, really fascinating.
Yeah. So,
and this is it just the, you know, the Bosco, I know the Bosco Scura chassis and the Calix chassis, but you also use Calix parts for the 600, correct?
Not really, no. Only, like, I think some on the Calix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think we do, yes. I got to check on that one. I don't really know what goes on the bike. But the brake the Brembos. I think the Brembos we use on the R6s are from Moto2s. But yeah, we use some parts.
So from the experience of using different brakes as well from Brembos to other brands, is there a big learning curve to them, or is it a simple case of it's the same thing?
Honestly, big difference. Huge difference. Pads, rotors, and master cylinder itself. You know what I mean? Like, you can be on the Z04s, Brembos. Like, those are my favorites. I use those. But my master cylinder, for GNGP, you have to use stock master cylinder. So we have the stock master cylinder with a 17 mil feel. So it's very spongy for me. I like the squeeze where I can feel it, feel what's going on the front end, feel it stopping.
Right.
It's like you touch it, and that's maximum brake. You can literally, you won't feel the brake pads get warm. It just comes to the stop, you know?
Wow, okay. And does everyone run the same for the R6s?
You can run like different pads and discs and stuff like that. But master cylinder has to be stock, I'm pretty sure. It has to be stock.
Right, okay. And how many bikes have you competed on now? You've used the R6, you ASBK used what did you use in ASBK?
R6, yeah.
Stayed with the R6 as well, yeah?
Yeah. R6 Moto America, R6 Australia, and R6 Spain. So
oh, it's all the way through R6, yeah.
Yeah. The bike I learned on, first ever bike I hopped on was the CBR 600. So, never learned a little bike.
600's always been in your blood then?
Yeah. I didn't realize it till in racing, like, how much the little bikes can help, I guess. So, but, yeah, I've just ever been on a 600 my whole life.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, looking at all the bikes in history, no matter what bike it is, or competition or discipline, what would be your ultimate bike to choose to race on?
Ultimate bike to race on?
Any bike.
Oh, it has to go back to those two strokes, dude, back in the day.
Really?
Those things would be so nice to ride.
They would be great, wouldn't they?
Oh, it'd be so scary because I've seen so many videos and races. Like, it's all in the throttle and it just, it's.
Yeah.
But how fun would one of those bikes be to ride? Like, I would love to be on those.
Are we talking MotoGP, two strokes, any of them? Just yeah. Give me one.
Any. Yamaha. Like, I'll take a Yamaha, Honda, anything. It's just,
that's amazing.
Beautiful bikes. Beautiful bikes.
See, that's before your time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you're paying homage to those ones. That's really cool. Yeah. I think they're terrifying, but they're absolutely amazing looking bikes. Yeah.
They're amazingly good bikes, just very terrifying, very scary.
So I guess you'd be going to a 600 to a 500, but it'd be way more dangerous.
Yeah, right? It'd be way more... I'd be a lot slower on that thing, for sure.
So if you were in that situation, or even in the situation now, what advice would you give to someone, or even your younger self then, dreaming about being the next Marquez or Rossi or Casey Stoner? What advice would you give?
Oh, jeez. Like, oh man, you know, seat time. Get as maximum seat time in as you can. Always race. Always keep racing. You know, you don't have to be on a bike every day of the week, but if you're on the bike you're racing, the more seat time you get, the better you get, the faster you get, you know. I've always lived by that. It's always been seat time.
Just keep honing those skills. Keep getting better every day.
Exactly. It's the only way to get it.
And compared to where you were last season to now this season, starting off with that mindset, with that time, the whole extra year, the crashes, the positives and negatives, is this the year, do you think, you're going to be a little bit step closer towards the goals?
100%. This year, like, I've really flipped my act, my brain, and, like, I've seen it now. I see how much, like, I really want. And I think, like, I'm so ready for this year. Like, I'm just determined. I'm ready to go. Like, I'm all there. Like, I'm all ready. I just think this year is just going to be a good year for me. I hope
so too, mate. And thinking about the last couple of questions I've got here is I wanted to ask actually about a couple of former world championship riders. And you got Lorenzo Dalla Porta, Borja Gomez as well, I think, in your competition too. Does that give you any extra motivation when you see those?
100%, you know what I mean? Like, they're fantastic riders, you know, they've been in the GP, they've done the stuff, you know, and, like, it's definitely the goal to get there, like, you know, but it's crazy to, like, actually be racing against them, because it goes to show you, like, when you're racing against a Moto3 world champion and a Moto2 rider, it's, like, it's crazy when you're racing them, because, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm at the pace that these guys are at.
Yep.
So it gives you that little inch forward, like, hey, like, I could almost beat this Moto3 world champion rider that did Moto2, or I'm actually right behind him. How crazy is this, you know?
I was just thinking that, because I wrote down there to ask that question at the same time, because to have that bonus of you feeling, you know, I'm ready this year, go up against tougher competition. Some people may think, well, the tougher competition means worse off, but I'm with you. I think it's motivation that get me even closer towards them.
Exactly, exactly. Bring it on. Bring out all the fire, the heat. Like, I want every bit of it. Like, that's get there. Like, I look at the front people, and I always wanted my teammate Dina. I always wanted to be behind him in the races. Like, he was my motivation to get to the front, you know. So it's everything I can get.
I love it. I love the mindset. I love the motivation. You're going to go far, mate. And I can't wait to follow the journey. I'm so keen for the 4th of May now.
Thanks, mate. I really appreciate that.
I'm going to be backing you up, and hopefully I'll be able to see you in the paddock at some point as well.
Yes. Yes, I'm hoping so. Don't know when. Hoping you're coming out soon.
Well, fingers crossed, mate. Fingers crossed. I'm definitely going to try nonetheless. But we're more or less wrapped up now. So just final bit then, Declan, if you don't mind.
No worries.
Any messages for the fans or anything you'd like to say to end our podcast here today?
Oh, you know, everyone stay good, of course. Keep following your dreams. Keep working at it. Work hard. Just keep working hard at what you're doing. And follow your dreams always. Never say you can't do it. You can't.
Keep pushing. Keep going.
Exactly.
Well, Declan, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate, and thank you so much for joining us here today. You are an absolute wonderful personality, and I think I could chat to you all day, but I am conscious that you're in Spain. It's getting a little bit late now for you.
It is catching up, yeah.
So I don't want to take too much of your time, but I would love to have you on again as well if you're interested.
Amazing. I would love to do that. It would be amazing.
Thanks so much. I'm really appreciative. Maybe we'll get Craig on as well, and you can tell your antics. I think that would be a great podcast.
That would be perfect. That'd be hilarious.
Well, then, thanks for your time, Declan. I really appreciate it. Guys, check out the Junior GP stock category. 600s will be kicking off in Portimao, if I'm not mistaken, on the 4th of May.
No, we go to Estoril. Yeah, Estoril.
Estoril. My notes are wrong. But anyway, check him out. Check out the rest of the Knee Down podcast as well. Declan, big thanks for being here, mate. And I guess we'll see you all next time. Ciao for now.